Now, think about this. Many of you have things that you really hope for in life. Some people, for example, are still single, and it's very dangerous these days. When I was growing up, you know, sex was good, the drugs were good, the music was good. And as Stephen Stills put it, they said, what should the music of the new millennium be like? And he said, well, he said, sex can kill you now. The drugs are really bad, and they can kill you. So the music better be real good, or we're going to be a really depressed country. And can you believe the people they have doing anti-drug commercials these days? Grace Slick? Excuse me. I'm not going to listen to Grace Slick, because Grace Slick says, well, you know, when I was younger, I took drugs, and look what it did for me. Yeah, it made you a multi-fucking millionaire, you know? Allowed you to tour the world, and then, of course, you got arrested, so now you have to do these commercials. But they're not very believable. Stephen Stills telling kids, like, wow, man, drugs are bad for you. So when they tell you, don't take drugs, just say no. I had to listen to that one 3 times before it went through. And I went, when they tell you, just take drugs, don't say no. What was that again? I didn't get that. Now, think about it. Okay, there are things that you know are going to happen. And if you stop right now and you think, you know that 30 days from now, you're going to pay your mortgage, pay your rent. When you think about it in your mind, it's in a certain place. It's inevitable. When you think a year from now, there are things you know will happen. For example, I used to know that my relatives would come and visit me no matter what. Though I found a way around that. Don't be there. I started arranging for when they were going to come, I would go somewhere else. And it works out really good when they get to your house, and because they used to come uninvited, and I didn't like that. And I don't even have a big house. I live in a very small place because I'm never there. But I used to just let my dog bite them, but then they get all fussy about that. I taught them I'd take pieces of their clothing and go, smell this. And then I'd go, attack. Because pretty soon I could go, oh, it's Paula's relatives. And the dog would go, rawr. It's like, and I also had the dog trained so that when people had that religious smell, that she would suddenly, it was like watching The Exorcist. She could turn her head around backwards. She would just go absolutely berserk. And I used to raise German shepherds and train them as attack dogs and guard dogs and stuff for the military. Because I one time thought I would move out of the city and, you know, go out to that organic lifestyle in the country. And I moved to the country and immediately converted it into the city. I did everything. I got rid of all that stuff like brush and everything and put in sidewalks. You know, I had a lot of acreage. And when I got done, it looked like a housing tract. I even put in my own store that it was. I just didn't like stuff like dirt and bugs and all that stuff. And the animals just ran around out there. I didn't like that. It's like the deer would come by and eat your garden, and the bobcats would come by and piss on your house, and you know, and it's like it just didn't sit with me. I'm a city kid, you know. I mean, I know how to deal with city things, but things like bears, I was not ready for. You know, I opened up, I heard some clanking in the garbage can, so I stepped outside, and here was this thing bigger than me with a garbage can lid in one hand, right? And it looked at me, and I looked at it, and we both went and ran away. But that was pretty much it for me, the fact that there could be something that could kill you outside. And then I found out there are snakes, which, I'm not terribly afraid of them, but I don't really like them, you know, in my car. So I moved back to the city. I found out it's better that way. So my wife said, well, you know, you really can't live without dogs. So she came home with something this big and said it was a dog, right? And I was like this in my hand, and I went, this is a dog? And she went, yeah, it's a dog. And I went, doesn't look like a dog. And its mother had died, so I fed it with a little eyedropper for months and stuff, and it grew to be huge. It grew to be this big, right? However, the dog doesn't know this, and this dog is more ferocious than any German Shepherd I ever had. And in fact, I still had some, and when I'd go back out into the country, they were all terrified of this little thing. It's all teeth, and it goes underneath them and bites their feet, and they're like, not the toes, not the toes. But this animal knows no fear whatsoever, and it thinks it can fly. And I saw this movie one time called Where the Buffalo Roam, where this guy, Hunter Tonsman, had taught his dog. He had a dummy, and he would say, Nixon, and it would go and bite the balls. And I thought, now that's a good idea. That command works for me. And because I trained all my German Shepherds to use Yiddish commands. something about that I found ironical, so that, you know, you could go, ah, what a bunch of Michigas, and the dogs would go and tear someone to shreds. the word yutz, I just point and go, yutz, and the dogs would go, ah. To me, that, you know, no matter what I do, I'm trying to make it so that it's enjoyable. But think about it. If you know that things are inevitable, now I want you to stop, and when you do it, think, where in your mind is it? I mean, if you know something's going to happen, and you're sure of it, but it's going to happen in 6 months, where is it? Right? And you'll discover that pretty much it'll line up in a certain place. Some people, the future's in front of them. Some, it's off like this. Some people have the past behind them. If you're in Japan, it's culturally defined. Future's up, past is down. Saves you a lot of time when you're trying to elicit timelines. But the more important thing is if you think about what it is that you hope and want for yourself. My question is, in the future, does it ever cross what you know is going to happen? You think of what you hope for, and it's over there, and what's going to happen is over here, the odds of it happening are severely reduced. If you think about things that you just have to do, when you think about it, bam, it's inevitable. For example, I've had some people who, they thought about chocolate, they knew they were going to eat it. Right, but when they thought about finding somebody to love and getting married and being successful, that was over here. So that the things that would happen to them by design don't ever work out in a way that's going to make it so that, you know, you're at least making it so that you stand a chance. See, I mean, if you don't ever practice a musical instrument, you will never be able to play it. Right, and when I was in school, they gave me a thing, this little plastic thing, and they said, "This is a song flute." They handed me a booklet, and they said, "These are notes. Learn to play the song in it." And it was Yankee Doodle Dandy. Not a song I liked, right? Not highly motivated, right? And I took it home, and I did other things with it. I played things that I liked better, although it didn't sound very good anyway. And then they had everybody in the class. They'd go play, and they'd hand the thing, and people went, "I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy." And they went, "Oh, you're in the band." Right, and they asked me to play it, and I said, "I don't remember what the song is." And the guy said, "Well, you just heard five people play it." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I tried not to listen, though." I said, "I didn't like it." I said, "You want me to play something else?" And he said, "No." He said, "You're just not musical." And then he leaned forward, put his nose right in front of my face, and he said, "You will never learn to play a musical instrument." Now, in case you haven't figured it out, I'm a bit of a polarity responder. When people tell me something is impossible and can't be done, I have a little voice in my head that goes, "Fuck you. Just fuck you, you know? What makes you think you know the truth?" Right? Because I've had so many people in my life just tell me things as if it was real. They told me that I would be safe if I got under my desk when a nuclear bomb went off. How many of you did that? If you're the same age as me, you crawled under... When you hear the siren, get under your desk because a nuclear strike is... Now, where I went to elementary school, you could look out the window, see Ames Research, Lockheed, Berry and Fairchild, Moffett Field. Basically, I was at ground point zero. And some fucking rocket scientist has me underneath a little desk, right, hiding from nuclear war. Now, this gave me a really bad attitude about experts, right? And down the line, I keep finding out that, gee whiz, they give me kids, they tell me they're learning disabled. And I keep finding that I have trouble finding out. They go, "They're cross-hemisphere." Or my favorite, "They're dyslexic." Try this. Go down to schools and say, you know, "I work with kids who are dyslexic." The teachers will miss it. They will. They go, "Oh, really?" Now, to me... Working with dyslexic kids, what is a dyslexic kid? This is a child who has not figured out certain things that are not important to them. Period. If you can't tell a D from a B, then you're not doing it kinesthetically. Not visually. It has nothing to do with anything visual. You need to lean one way as opposed to the other. The letters are in front of you. One leans this way, one leans that way. It takes a second. And then suddenly you spend 15 minutes with a kid and then they can do it. And read. And what do I get? Is this some kind of satanic thing? Is this done with hypnosis? You know, because hypnosis is the devil's work. And I go, it is not. Right? The devil's not really very good at it at all. After all, I have him in a trance. right? He's hanging outside of Bill Clinton's office, in case you haven't noticed. You've probably seen him. He wears a disguise. His name is Hillary. Or is his name Star? One or the other. To me, what do you really think is demonic? See, to me, that the fact that we build a theory that blames, for example, when I started out, the reason people didn't change is they weren't ready yet. How's that for weird? Then why are you collecting money from them once a week? Or they weren't mature enough, or they were resistant. And I mean, to me, you know what a resistant client is? Somebody who's got a little intelligence, I would think. Now, they can't resist change because once you give them a choice, people will make it. And to me, if you don't provide it to them, if they just tell them, look, you shouldn't be the way you are, right, then what are they going to do? They go, you should be more mature. You are resisting my wise and intelligent information. And people go, well, then you can feel bad about feeling bad, which is meta-bad, I guess, right? So you not only have guilt, you have guilt about having guilt, right? And then you end up having to talk to chairs and couches, I guess. I don't know. Think about this one. Electric shock treatment? Excuse me, whose idea was this? Some guy who liked to work in his shop on the weekends and was feeling kind of down in the dumps, you know, and kind of bad because his clients weren't getting any better. I know it's not you. I can tell. I can actually localize sound. I now can deliberately break devices, too. It wouldn't be good to piss me off if you had a pacemaker, I'll tell you that. But I'll tell you, the nice thing about it is those policemen, when they pull you over, they come over and they go, well, and go, I'm going to go check my radar. And they always go back and go. And I go, gee, officer, can I go now? And they go, yeah, seems to be some problem with my equipment. And I go, really? How is that? I said, it's all right, it'll be okay in a few minutes. Because the minute I walked out of the IBM thing, all the power came back on. And you know what they said? They said, well, it's just a coincidence. And I walked back in and it all went off. And I walked back out and it went back on. Just a coincidence. Except I did it 8 times. And then somebody in there said, keep that motherfucker out of here. Somebody else said, send him into the personnel office. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't erase tapes, although I do know how to do it. I used to have a briefcase with a 25,000 gauze electromagnet in it. Flipped the handle over and 25,000 gauze came off. I used to use that because I rented some videos and I brought them back. And then they called me a week later and asked me to bring them back. And I said, I brought them back. And they said, yeah, well, our records don't show that. And I said, well, that's not really my problem now, is it? And they said, yes, it is, because we're going to put this on your credit report. They haven't seen my credit report. You couldn't even find it on there. You know, with me, because, I mean, you piss me off. I don't care about my credit rating. It really doesn't interest me at all. I said, if I really want to change, then I'll go in and change it. After all, TRW, when they set up that whole system, they used a machine I designed to build it. Right? But, I mean, to me, I don't think you need to do things like that. I think all you need to do is to realize that when people are in that position like that, they need to be taught a lesson. So I went in and said, okay, let's go over all of your records and see if we can figure that out. And I put my briefcase on top of their hard drive. Put the handle down. And you know what? They couldn't find any records at all about anything. And I said, well, if you guys don't keep records, how can you tell me I owe you money? Because I know by the time I went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, I wouldn't be having fun. And my first question I ask is not, am I superior to people? A lot of people I meet go, Dr. Bandler, you seem to be enjoying yourself an awful lot, and you don't seem to be concerned on whether you are in a meta-complimentary position or not. And I said, fuck no, I don't give a damn. Doesn't make a difference to me whether somebody is superior to me or not. It just matters whether I'm having a good time. I'm always asking myself the question, am I having fun yet? And how else can I enjoy myself? Because the reason I do what I do is not because I'm an inherently helpful person, but because I like to see things at work. You know, my wife is always giving me things she buys at flea markets and going, well, it's beautiful, but it doesn't work. And the next thing you know, I have some old clock apart, you know, and I'm down there going, because to me, it's when things work, then I'm happy. And my clients are going to change or they're going to die while I'm trying. And they know that. After a while, they go, please leave me alone. I told you everything's fine. And I go, but I don't trust you. You're not smiling enough. I followed you around for 2 days. Yeah. Your problem's gone, but that's not good enough, you know. To me, yeah, if they get rid of the phobia, that's fine. But I want to know how their whole life is going to turn around. It's not good enough to me. I want them to shine, and I want them to smile, and I want them to, everybody they meet, for them to do what yogurt does. Because if we start being happy, we'll resonate just like the yogurt. And then the parts of people that can be happy are going to start going off. We could throw a whole conspiracy behind this. Because right now, the cranky is winning. Right? There's too many people going, see, that's why I don't like to be awake during the day. It makes me nauseous, you know? It's like, you know, I've built a shield where I am so that, you know, I feel like I'm in the Starship Enterprise, that delicate thing that they fly around the universe that breaks every other week. I'm sorry, Captain, I cannot do it. The crystals will blow, you know. Well, get new crystals, damn it, will you? So he's, Scotty, you've got to give me the power now. And he's going, I'm sorry, Captain, this thing's a piece of junk, you know. I mean, to me, this is the thing you're dealing with. If you don't have a good way to make decisions, and if you haven't lined up the pieces about what you want so they're aimed in the right direction. See, if you really want things, but it never goes into your plan, then you're never going to get there. That's why people go, yeah, when I retire, I'm really going to enjoy life. But right now, it sucks. So then they work, and you ask them, you go, well, look, when you look into the future, can you see yourself having everything you want? And I like this. One guy said to me, oh, yeah, man, I have a big house. My family's all there. They're all happy. We have a boat. We have beautiful camper. We have everything. And I said, are you in the picture? And they go, no. And I said, so you died of a heart attack, and they collected the insurance. And they always look at me like, you know about the heart condition? And I said, well, it wouldn't be hard to guess. Because if you don't make it so that getting there is as good as where you're going, when you get there, what if you discover you don't want it? And this happens all the time. People go, well, if I have this, I'll be happy. And they end up head of a corporation, working themselves to death, and they hate every moment of their life. Right? And then they come to me and they go, life sucks. And I go, well, your life sucks. Mine's fine. You know, I said, I'm sorry. You know, I was head of a corporation, but I was also chairman of the board. So I fired myself and resigned as chairman of the board and gave my stock to the Goodwill. And everybody that worked there went, well, why did you do that? And I said, because you people are all assholes, right? And I said, and I spent all my time fixing problems, and I said, and I'm sorry, I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. What I wanted to do had to do with finding out things by just asking simple questions. Now, what I want you to do is, and I know some of you have done some NLP, if you have, get together with somebody who hasn't. Help them out a little bit. How many of you have done some NLP so you know what elicitation is? Oh, good. See, if you're not one of those people, pick one. That is, they'll help you out a little bit because the elicitation we're going to do is really very simple. I just want you to get a piece of paper because I want you to imagine if everything I'm talking about was visible, because eventually it will be. But when I think about it, to me, there's a couple things I want to know. When somebody makes a good decision versus a bad decision. Now, everybody's made a bad decision and a good decision. They don't have to tell you what it is. We'll leave the content out of this, okay? Just have somebody go, think about a decision you made that was really a good one. When you ask the question, don't look at your piece of paper, okay? Watch them. And don't sit right in front of them either, because if you do, you'll be in the way, right? I want you to notice where they focus their eyes, about how far. Because after a while, you get good enough, you know, because people don't do their thinking in their head. They kind of do it outside. You know, they put stuff here and they put stuff there. And, for example, you want to know, does it go to the right? Does it go to the left? See, for example, when I asked the question just now, a whole bunch of you looked one way. Some of you looked the other. Some looked over here. And all you have to do is notice this. And then I want you to follow up with a primitive technique called asking. Okay? And what I want you to do is you say, is the thing that was a good decision in a different place than the one that was a bad decision? Because you have to tell them apart. And they go, yeah. You go point to the one that's a good decision. And if they point here, you'll probably notice that it's where they were looking in the first place. And then I want you to find out how big it is, okay? Because it makes a difference. Is it in color? Is it in black and white? Right? And compare it with the bad decision, which will be in a different location, a different size. And I want you to just generally kind of run through. There's a thing in your little book that has some submodalities in it. It has a list on two different pages. I don't know what page it's on, but you'll find it. Somebody will find it and yell it out loud, and we'll have 20 different pages. But basically, it's like your TV. You have a brightness control, right? And TVs come in sizes. Well, the one in your head can change size. And it's either a movie, it's either in color or black and white. And you'll discover there are radical differences. Now, if you can notice the difference between good decisions and bad decisions, as you go through this, then when you start to make decisions, you may notice they're in the wrong place. This can make a big difference. And that the way you feel when you do it is different. That when you're making a bad decision, I think you always know. Something inside you is going, well, I really shouldn't, but, you know, he really needs the money, and I'm sure he'll pay me back. You know, and then after you've done it 25 times, you know, you're mad as hell at yourself. And when you go to ask for it back, they get pissy at you. And, you know, to me, it's like, then when they come back and ask you again, you go, well, I'm not making this mistake again. And you go, but, well, he really needs it. So if you find yourself, because I know a lot of people who get married, have a horrible time, get divorced, and then marry the same person in a different body. Have you ever seen this? It's scary. I had one guy that he married three times, and they looked so much alike, I couldn't tell them apart. I kept calling him the other one's name. This does not make you a popular guy, by the way. But they acted the same, they sounded the same, and they were just as shitty as the other one. And, you know, he'd be just crushed, and he goes, I hate her, I never want to see her again, and then he'd go out and find somebody just like her. I mean, to me, it's like, if this is what happens. For example, have you ever thought about how somebody goes through all the trouble to get off of heroin and then takes it again? I mean, it's no fun at all to kick drugs like this, but yet, especially my favorite one is the instant way to poverty, cocaine. This is a drug that, you know, you take it and it yells you, take more, right? It, you know, it's like, to me, if I want to take a drug, I want it to last. I liked LSD. It lasted for 12 hours. It costs $2. That's my idea of a drug. And after you do it a few times, you don't even need the drug. You just think about it and you go, dee dee ding ding ding. It's great. And where are all those flashbacks they promised us anyway, you know? I want to get my money back. They said, you know, there's going to be flashbacks. And I thought, free drugs, cool. But no, there weren't flashbacks. There was just more people telling me about them, telling me about the dangers of things. You know what's dangerous? Is that they're not sold in pharmacies. That's dangerous, right? You know, instead they force people into ghettos and into the streets and buying things. And then the government, you know, goes around. Plus, we're financing all kinds of criminal organizations doing horrible things, bombing things in Bogota. Didn't we learn anything from, you know, the period where we built organized crime with, you know, this wonderful thing where we allowed all the bootleggers, like the Kennedys, to make all that money? You know, that's how the Kennedys made all their money. They were bootleggers. That's why I'm not surprised that the Italians were in on this thing where Kennedy was shot. You know, I mean, to me, it's like the mafia was in on it, and they were killed in Lyndon Baines Johnson's hometown. They go, who do you think shot Kennedy? And I said, I think it was part of a group activity, right? You know, the idea that, well, unless this guy really knew how to ricochet bullets so he could get them from two sides at once. Now they've gone and done a computerized scan of the brain tissue and found out there's no way in the world that all that stuff that's in the report, the autopsy, could be Kennedy. That can't be his brain. So now we know that the whole report was falsified. The government lied to us? Of course, constantly. Get used to it. These people who are in power, of course they're lying. How do you think you get there? Anybody who wants to be a politician shouldn't be allowed to. When people want to be in charge of other people, typically I find that they haven't gotten their own house in order. When people get really happy, see, people are always saying to me, they go, Mr. Handler, you know, as a guru, and I go, guru, give me a break. I'm not that sociable. I don't mind going and teaching a little bit, but people try and follow me, I'll lose them in a cold second. I'll sick the dogs on them. To me, you know, it's nice. I like them to learn and then go do things themselves. I want my clients to talk to me a year later and tell me how good things are going. I want to see it work. I don't want them, like when I was here the very first time at Northwestern, a psychiatrist raised his hand and said, well, Dr. Bandler, all these techniques are all well and fine, but isn't the real thread in the core of psychotherapy the relationship between the patient and the therapist? And I said, no, I I think if people have to pay you money to have a relationship, that's prostitution. I said, what, are you afraid you're going to run out of crazy people? I'm not. You know, I find the more that I work with people, there's just plenty of people out there that want to do more. And there's plenty of room for improvement. You know, the idea of evolution, do you really think it's over? I sure hope not. You know, think about this. Okay, auditory in, auditory out. You know, olfactory in, olfactory out. You know, kinesthetic in, kinesthetic out. Visual in. So if you think about somebody just right, and these psychics, I've done a lot of modeling of psychics, and the ones that can actually do something, hey, you can fuck them up real good. You know, you stand between them and the person and visualize something, and they'll start telling you about it. And I've picked obscure things. One of them, I thought about a door I was fixing in my house, because I made all the doors left-handed, because I'm left-handed. Well, you should watch the right-handed people have trouble with that. And then they turn it and they push when they should pull and they don't know what to do. They get frustrated and pull it back, hit themselves in the head. But I even had the molding strips off the side when I was changing it. And I just sat there and focused on and made a picture of that in my mind. And the psychic person was talking to somebody else and they went, there's a door in your house that's not finished. And the person went, yes. And I made it like that. And they described the molding and they even described what was out the door. Had little panes of glass and out the back door was my swimming pool. And they described the swimming pool and the dog swimming around in the pool, right? And the person was like trying to figure out what the metaphor of dogs was about in their life. It's really good. And they went, dogs in a swimming pool. They go, well, that's like, you know, and they went through this big thing because people will distort things so that they fit. And I said, I don't think that's what's going on here. And the psychic said, I have a funny feeling about this. I even did one where they read jewelry. You give them jewelry of people and they tell you about the person. And I had a piece of jewelry made by a jeweler, untouched by any human hand, and dropped it in the bag with all the other stuff. And when the psychic went through, they were telling people about it, and they pulled out the ring, and they went, this is nothing, and threw it aside and went on. Nonchalantly, had no idea what I'd done. So there's all kinds of stuff going on. Don't let anybody kid you. There are a lot of people that say, well, you know, there's no scientific proof. Well, let's take a look at the scientific method, shall we? It of and of itself, by the way, it's called the null set hypothesis. This is where, in order to know that something is true, you figure out something that could be true, and then you figure out something that, if it were true, would mean that that is not true, and you set about proving what it is that would not be possible if what you were believing were true. And then you set up double-blind studies so that you don't know whether you're doing it or not, right? And they believe that you can do this. And I have constantly fucked with their heads about this. I gave them genetically superior rats. Right, and we even delivered them from a biogenetics place, so they were convinced because it had the label on the box. Ooh, don't you love that printer you have? I do. Make labels from everything, forms from everything. You'll have to sign for these, right? And they signed guys in white lab jackets, man. And they took these rats, and they sure enough, they had the control rats and the genetically superior rats. By the way, all from the same pet store. The way in which we decided which ones were genetically superior is all the ones that had any white spots on them anywhere, those were the genetically superior ones. And if they didn't have any white spots, they were the other ones. Put them in and they ran them through tests, and sure enough, they proved scientifically, right? But then they believe that rats, right, memorize, and all animals. They say that animals don't think. I say anybody who believes that has never owned a cat. Cats plan for when you're gone. They go, yeah, go ahead and leave. And leave that dress on the couch, too, will you? The knitted one. Then you come home, and it's shit in your bathtub. You know, and there are dogs that are sneaky. Some aren't, but there are dogs that are sneaky. And, you know, they dream and everything. And these scientists don't believe it. They go, we are superior. We are the only animal that thinks. And I go, really? Thinks? And they go, huh? And I go, yeah. Hold that thought. So we go in, and they show me their rats running in the maze. And I said, well, excuse me, if they memorize this as muscle movements, does a rat swimming the same as a rat running? They went, of course not. So I filled the maze up with water, boom, right to the cheese. See, because anybody that thinks that rats don't think does not live in the city. Now, I'll tell you, man, not only do they say they have planning meetings, you know, they're down there with drawing boards, man. Then we're going up the pipes. You guys go in the side window, tap on it, distract them to the left. We'll run in, right, and pull a raid. You distract the dog. In fact, three of you go in and kill it. You know, I mean, because in the city, the rats can get big, and they've genetically learned. They'd ripped some buildings down next to where my daughter lives, and they went in and they gutted the buildings and put things in there, and they brought in the thing that's going to knock these things down, and they put up all these things so that when the rats went crazy and ran out of the building, they wouldn't be able to run out on the streets. And when they knocked this building down, there wasn't a single rat in it. They had moved. I guess they read the notice. Well, they saw everybody else going. They went, something's wrong. We better get out of here. Quick, let's all on the truck. Let's go to his house. Now, psychic stuff, I'll tell you. You know, to me, think about extrasensory perception. People who said that they were observant, these were called psychologists, like experimental psychologists, research psychologists, clinical psychologists, marriage and family counselors, psychologists. All of these fuckers are out there telling us they're observant, and they missed this. Let's see. It feels like a good opportunity, but it looks scary. Now, how the fuck did they miss that? It seemed, you know, you see it, once you hear about it, then it's everywhere. You know, it's like a Fellini movie for the next 2 weeks. You go in the supermarket, or as I like to call it, decision land, right? And people go up to the counters and go, you know, especially at 2 a.m, it's really a thrill. I always go by and go, take the tomato juice, please, take the tomato juice. And they go, but I can't because it won't. And I go, no, no, it's all right. I got a message from God. And they go, okay, I'll take the tomato juice. I go, thank you, and he'll be pleased. You will get to go to the afterlife, but you won't like it. I'm sorry. You know what it is? It's because when you get there, it's parochial school for eternity. Suddenly, there you are, and you can hear clicking heels going down a wooden quarter. And suddenly you become afraid, and you know that a nun is going to catch you masturbating. This is what a psychiatrist told me his biggest fear was when he was young. And I said, how old are you? And he said, I'm 60. And I said, and you still have nightmares about this? And I said, mm-hmm. And where exactly do you live? And he said, well, you know, he said, I haven't been around nuns in a long time. And I said, oh, okay, so you haven't been around nuns in a long time. What exactly does that mean? What's left? And I said, so you're afraid someone's going to catch you masturbating? And he turned red as a, you know, just like this, like people don't masturbate, especially since AIDS, masturbation's made a big comeback, you know. Really has, you know. It's like the choice of dying, you know, or masturbating, I think, you know, well, and after all, the Pope said it's okay as long as you keep it in hand. Now, all I want you to do is, I know we're going to run a little bit late today, don't worry about it. We'll make up for it on Tuesday, okay? What I want you to do is, I don't want you to dawdle, I don't want you to discuss this, I just want you to go and ask them to tell you about a good decision and find out first if it's in a different location, is it a different size, is it in a different color, and then things that, you know, that were good decisions versus bad decisions, and then I want you to try something silly, okay? I want you to ask them to think about something they're deciding about now, some decision, doesn't have to be a huge one, maybe buying a dress, I don't care, and notice which one it pops into. Don't try to change it, okay? You don't have to fix anything. I know it's a compulsion with neurolinguistic programmers. They want to change everything. First, we want to find out what's there. Then we'll figure out how to use it, okay? Because tomorrow we want to do things. I figure before you change other people, the first thing you have to do is get back and de-age yourself. See, they said you had to get older, and I've decided to get younger as the years go by. And because I think if you genetically were able to build a person from one cell, right, then you should be able to go back to a certain amount of time and generate different enzymes and hormones. For example, with diabetes, they tell you that your beta cells are dead because you basically have an allergy to yourself and there's nothing you can do about it, so just take your insulin and shut up. I thought that was a real liberal attitude and a lousy set of post-hypnotic suggestions. They also give you booklets telling you you're going to go blind, lose your feet, and become impotent. If you cut your foot, you'll have to have it amputated. And I thought, you mean, so I don't have any immune system either? And then I started trying something. I started looking at the insulin, and I started thinking, well, you know what? If I can eat liver, but yet when they do a transplant, my body rejects it, that doesn't make much sense, does it? What's the difference? And so I thought, whoa. So I took some of the insulin and I put it into a nasal inhaler. And I started going, so I started snorting insulin as well as taking it. And the amount of insulin that I need to take has been decreasing at a very rapid rate, which can only be explained by God's making it happen, or I have a few beta cells that are growing back, and I'm not killing them anymore. And I found out on the internet, which is the only cool thing about it, that I wasn't the only one with this idea, that actually this is being tried in Australia and one other place, although it's a big secret. Apparently, we're not supposed to know about anything if it's working. See, like this spontaneous remission thing, you guys should try it. Okay, you got your clock? Okay, anything about your health you're not happy with, set the clock for late enough that you know that you'll be asleep, right? And instead of, when you set it, going, wake up, because you don't want to wake up then, okay? Go on, blah, blah, I'm going to wake up at whatever time you're going to wake up. Then set the clock and go, while I'm asleep, my unconscious is going to go in and see, for example, if you'd like to lose a little weight, right, don't diet. It's bad for you. It makes your body think you're starving. Instead, speed your fucking metabolism up so you just burn stuff like a teenager. Right? And go, my metabolism is going to slowly burn things, right, faster, so that I'll lose a little bit of weight slowly, imperceptibly, such that I'm comfortable. But while I'm losing it, I'm still going to be happy and realize, you know, that you're a part of nature just as much as anything else is. I mean, to me, any woman that doesn't look in the mirror and think of herself as a goddess is going to have bad tonality. That's all there is to it. And worse than what they treat other people is going to be how they treat themselves. And then other people are going to treat her bad, and it's going to be a big thing. Pretty soon everybody's going to be cranky, right? And then if women lose more weight than they should and they're hungry all the time, then they're really cranky. I hate that. I really can't stand it when women come in and I look at them and they go, oh, my God. Because you know what we're doing? We're making magazines such that the people that are really pretty look like they're starving in Africa. So that what we're doing is we're saying, well, these countries are not full of starving people. They're just fashionable. And I don't like the idea that starvation is fashionable. You know, and the doctors have decided that your ideal weight, by the way, I think, you know, whoever made this chart, you know, ought to examine their head. The ideal weight that people should be is whatever weight they stay at and they're happy and healthy. Now, people can have too much weight, and then they speed up their metabolism, but typically they don't feel happy and healthy. You know, I mean, to me, it's like you should just adjust it so it goes where it is, because it's unconscious. Your heart beats just fine, but yet you can go into a trance and control your heart rate. You can control your blood pressure. And I know people go, ooh, hypnosis, you're out of control. Well, if that's being out of control, sign me up. When I watched what my clients were doing in trance, suddenly one day I went, wait a minute, I want to do this stuff. How come they're doing this and they can't do it anyway? Well, it turns out that if you set it up and put lots of controls in your mind, then you can begin to do things like have warning lights that go off. Warning, warning, this is a bad decision. Stop it. Because you can set up all kinds of things with this clock that you have. If it can wake you up out of a sound sleep, why can't it change your metabolism? Why can't it give you, what, hey, 3 o'clock every night? Everybody in this room is to engage in the activity of spontaneous remission. Even if there's things wrong with you that you don't know about, your unconscious can monitor these things. Somewhere you must know, and so you might as well fix it ahead of time. Right? Clean out your arteries, clean out your lungs. Right? Start, you know, if you want, you know, how about making it so that suddenly at night something changes in you so that your metabolism shifts in such a way that your enjoyment of sex goes up by 4 times. 4 times as long, 4 times as intense, and 4 times the pleasure. What if there's just a switch in your head you have to go click? So as you go to sleep, you go, remember, click that switch and weld it shut. Lord knows I have mine welded shut. I put it into a dial so it goes 4, 8, 12, infinity. Now, people, you know why people haven't done this? Because they just haven't thought about it. The limits of what human can do, we'll never know. Because all we can do is try new things and find things that work. If they don't work, don't do them. But if people go, well, how do I know this is going to work? You don't. And if you don't try with every fiber of your soul, you'll never know. See, what I do is I build this belief, which I know is not true, where I believe that everything is going to work and everything is possible. And then I try it, and if it doesn't work, fine. Even if it does work, then I go, well, now how can I do this quicker and easier? To me, I just want to do with people. I just want to be able to just, like that guy back there. You know all those terrible things that were going on in your life? Where's the guy that was laughing? You moved. You're now in the back. Look at his face. Just stand up, will you? Right, come here. Actually, come on up here. Sit down. I know, it'd be easier that rather than them all getting neck aches. Right? If you, just sit down. That's right. Sit for a spell. It's okay. Now, if you look at his face, okay, compared to the way it is, you notice how it's a lot more color in it, doesn't it? Right? Something is happening, and that something is important because what's being redesigned inside of him is that all kinds of things which he automatically had trained himself over his life to feel bad about aren't going to work. Right? For example, I mean, you know in your mind that there are certain things that certain people in your life could do that would make you feel bad, just stress you out. All right. Think of the last time one of those things happened. Oh, come on, you can do it. Feel bad, just for me. Go back. See what you, close your eyes. See what you saw at the time. Hear what you heard. Think of it as therapy. You can go back and find that pain, can't you? Because if you can find it in the past, it'll be there in the future. And quit smiling while you do this, too, you know. I mean, you have to be serious. Otherwise, you're going to feel good for the rest of your life. It's a very contagious thing. Hey, you know, I've devoted years of my life to doing this kind of stuff, and you're up here laughing at me. This is no laughing matter. You know, I hear this from scientists all the time, and I go, well, yuck, what you've been doing for years doesn't work, though. Think about it. They told me that I could not go in and work with people in mental hospitals because I did not have the proper license. And I said, well, wait a minute. So a psychiatrist who has a license can actually help these people. And they went, no. So I said, if I had that license, it would mean I couldn't help them. And they went, well, that's one way of looking at it. And I said, well, let's find out. So I went in and did things like, you know, sure, I woke the catatonics up, but then I didn't tiptoe around them either. You know, I have to admit, I took a gas can and poured all the gas out of it, put water in it, and some nail polish remover so it would have that smell. And then I went in and I set it down on somebody with a loose cap and it fell over and it dripped all over them. Yeah. So their family had burned up in a fire. You know, sure, it's insensitive, but the guy for 7 years hadn't moved. He was a vegetable for all practical purposes, but I didn't believe it. I just thought he needed proper motivation. So then I walked in and started talking to somebody else, smoking a cigarette, but I had a lighter, and I kept almost lighting the cigarette and putting it back and holding the flame backwards, right? And I had only took like 5 or 6 times before he came out of this state. By the way, catatonics come out. And when they come out, it's like they haven't moved in a long time. They usually, in order to get into a state, they go into a state of full fucking rage. Okay? So if you ever do this, make sure you have a psychiatrist handy. Because you grab the psychiatrist and stick them between you and the catatonic. Because this guy screamed, you bloody fucking idiot! And lunged at me like this, and I said inside my mind, oh, shit. And I grabbed this shrink and went poof like that. And the guy grabbed him and put him on the floor and began smashing his head on the linoleum. And I went, good, good, get it all out. And assistant like went and he pulled the guy off like this, you know, and he said, what do I do now? And the psychiatrist was going like that. And I said, let go, of course. And the guy, then the psychiatrist took off and the guy ran after him. Now this guy wasn't in good shape. He had bed sores. He was emaciated. He'd been feeding him through a tube. I thought the psychiatrist could outrun him. So I don't really think it was my fault, you know? But the psychiatrist had on those slippery shoes, and when he tried to get around the corner, the guy grabbed him and turned around and smashed him against the wall and began smashing him again and again. And, of course, with my yelling, get it all out, it didn't help. And the orderly turned and he said, should I stop him? And I said, well, I think the patient already has, you know. And then, of course, it wasn't really very therapeutic of me to walk up to the guy and say, look, you know, I said, do you want to go back into a state where you're a fucking vegetable and you got a tube up your dick? And the guy looked down, and sure, there was that damned catheter he'd been dragging behind him. And suddenly, the pain receptors turned on, you know, because when you're running along and you got one of those things inside your dick, you know, well, in the rage, you might not notice it, but at that moment, boy, I want to tell you, something inside you goes, ow. And he went, and I said, you're going to have to ask the nice doctor here if it'll take it out, because I'm afraid I don't do that. And he has the guy like this, and he goes, will you help me? And he goes, are you going to hurt me again? And he went, no, not if you take it out. And it's kind of interesting watching the psychiatrist drop to his knees in front of the patient. It just sort of was a different thing, and I thought, well, you know, I guess these positions have changed. But, see, it wasn't that shrinks didn't help these people. They wanted desperately to. But when they went to school, they learned about sick man fraud. They learned about things, electric shock treatment. What did the guy do? He was depressed. He went in his lab, and he went, da, 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 and suddenly he went, and then afterwards he felt better, you know? Suddenly his thoughts were clearer or something, so he said, we could do this to everybody. I've had patients that had 16, 25 electric shock treatments, and they were all screwed up. I had one who, mysteriously, no matter what they did, they'd put this woman to bed, she would wake up in the ocean. She just suddenly would feel herself in the ocean. She didn't even live by the ocean. She lived a good hour and a half away. And she said to me, she said, well, when I'm going to sleep, she said, suddenly I see these blue, like electrical arcs. And when she said that, I said, excuse me. I said, have you ever had electric shock treatment? And she said, oh, yeah. She said, it was a long time ago. She said, you know, every time I would fantasize about being, you know, in the old neighborhood with my friends, because my husband made a lot of money and we moved to this area and I didn't know anybody. And she said, but I went to a psychiatrist and he said my daydreaming was escaping reality. So they gave her electric shock treatments every time she daydreamed. Oh, you mean hope? Think about what made her feel good and remember things she liked. Imagine if every time you had pleasant memories, you had to go through electric shock treatment. I think that would just fuck you up. But even though I hurt this guy, the psychiatrist that did that, wasn't the one that brought her to me, I have to admit. So I had to apologize to him first. But because I do have this thing that you have to educate people when they make mistakes. So I waited outside the hospital. And then when he was going out to his car, I went, surprise! Only I used a cattle shocker because it's more portable. And I said, hey, I'm just trying to cheer you up. Right? And the guy goes, get away from me now. Like that. And I said, isn't this going to make you feel better? You know, they only outlawed electric shock treatment in California last year. Excuse me. I mean, that's right out of the dark fucking ages. Electrocuting people is what you do to them when you want to kill them, isn't it? You know, or bring them back to life if they're dead. But to get somebody to think better, what is the theory here? Scramble the brains. Hopefully they'll come out better next time. I just think that these were desperate acts of desperate people who didn't have the technology or the wherewithal because the whole medical model was operating. There was something wrong with you that had to be fixed. There's nothing wrong with him, right? He's like everybody else. He learned to do things, and some of them were stupid. But the fact is, if you're such a good learning machine, all you have to do now is reorient them. For example, let me ask you, Benjamin, are there some things you have trouble motivating yourself to do that you wish you really could? Okay, don't hesitate on that, okay? All right, now let me ask you to do something. Are there some things that when you think about it, there's no problem motivating you whatsoever, that every fiber of your soul just has to do it? Some people, we call them fetishes. Some people like to hit balls over a net. You say, you want to play tennis? And it's sure, and they're out there playing tennis. There are some people like to jump out of airplanes. Some of us, maybe something else will come to mind. But close your eyes and think about something that you're really motivated to do. Where did the feeling start? Gee, that's a coincidence now, isn't it? All right, now let me ask you to do the same thing. Start the same feelings. Think about the thing you're really motivated to do. Now let them build up, but again, cycle it back through. Only this time, pull it right back in there, right? And then pull it through. Keep breathing, that's right. Cycle it through faster and faster. That's right. Take it easy there. Breathe evenly. You don't want to act like a geek in front of all these people. Right, just keep building it up faster and faster to it begins to whirl till you can almost hear it, right? To the point where you can, and then what I want you to do is to begin to see what it is that you would like to be motivated to do. then I want you to hear a voice inside your head that goes like this, goes, ooh, go for it, do it, please. That's right. Until you have a full-size, life-size picture of what it would be like when you're there, right? And then we're going to program a little clock inside your head that says, from this moment forward, every time you see this for the rest of your life, you're going to become wantonly motivated, and you'll have this feeling times two. Times two, times two. Now, do you feel like doing it?
Hell yes.
Are you sure?
Hell yes.
Funny how the hell comes into that, isn't it? That's right. Well, I guess we take care of that. Thank you very much, Benjamin. Just keep that for the rest of your life. And remember, I don't want your unconscious to generalize this to anything else you need. I don't like it when people go ahead on their own and start changing themselves wantonly. Now, look at his face. Now, go ahead. Thank you. You did beautifully. People ask me, they go, well, how do you know that any of this is going to have an effect? Well, after they look like that, odds are they're different. Because he's thinking about the same thing that he thought about and went, oh, I can't do that. I'd like to, but, well, you know, gosh, you know, I have to do things like read books and go to college, right? Some people can't even send their bills out at the end of the month because they go, God, I have to actually type them all out, you know. Right? Well, yeah, but what if every time you put one out, you feel better? We fixed a whole assembly line. A friend of mine worked at a place, and he said, do you really think you could use this stuff in an industrial environment? And I said, what exactly does that mean? And he said, well, there's one place, no matter what we do on the assembly line, they were building something, and he said, it always gets caught up because it's the most boring part. And whether we put more people on or not, it always gets bogged up there. And I said, well, good, let's take a look at it. So we went in, and I sat up in the window and watched people doing this, and I said, what the hell are you building? And he said, is it important? And I said, no. So I went down and I walked up and they showed me where, and you could see where it was jammed up. And all they did was put a cotta pin in, turn it like that, and then it went on to the next people. But after a while, they'd start at first for the first 5 minutes of the day. It would work fine. And then it would go along and it would get all jammed up. So I went in and I said, okay, I'm the new foreman. I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Insanity. And they went, who are you? And I said, just your boss. But I'm not going to be here long. I said, I just want to leave a lasting impression. So I said, now, what we're going to do is, I said, we're going to change all of this because we had the most boring part of the job. So I want to teach you something. And I turned on a cassette player, and it began to play a little tune, which I had written on my keyboard that had a certain rhythm. And then I began to just sort of dance back and forth, sing the rhythm, and put the piece in. And then I turned around and I said, yeah, you know, when you slide one of these in. And then I'd stopped and I looked at each one of them and I said, have you ever really succeeded at something and felt good? And they'd go, and I went, and anchored it. And then as it came around in the tune, I fired the anchor off. Within an hour, they were all doing a little dance step back and forth. And every time they put the cotta pin in, it made them feel good. Now, since I had written the music mysteriously on the tape, it begins to speed up. Right? Now, suddenly what happened is they were yelling at the people that they weren't sending them enough stuff down the line. And when I came back 2 weeks later, because I only worked the one morning, I came back 2 weeks later, the entire line was singing the song because it mysteriously made them feel good. Because since all of these people did this, and when they did the thing and they all went, the people next to them would smile and feel good, and they didn't know why. And it spread up and down the thing, and they absolutely tripled the output of production. They just wanted to meet what they were doing instead of falling backwards. And suddenly, without adding hours or people, they were putting out three times as much stuff. But there was one radical difference. When they went through and did the quality control checks, it went from 90% having to be redone to it being 0.013. Which means when they felt really good, they were doing good work. And it spread to everybody else. Complaining, you may have noticed, works the same way. That's why I don't let my clients do it. They always want to come in and whine about their lives. They go, and I go, shut up. You're not affecting me with that crap. I said, I don't care what happened to you when you were a child. And I said, and I sure don't want you to have to embarrass yourself and talk about it. And they go, well, I'm not embarrassed. And I go, well, you will be. Right? You're an adult. I had a woman 60 years old who was whining and moaning about the way her mother treated her. And she said, I argue with her all the time. And I said, does she live with you? And she said, no, my mother's dead. And I went, ooh. I said, so, like, you go to a medium or something and talk to her? And she goes, no, just in my head. And I went, where in your head? I said, I haven't got room for my mother in my head. And she goes, well, you know what I mean. It's not her, really. It's my image of her. And I said, well, if it's your image of her, I said, what I want you to do is just push it off into the distance till it's just a dot. Okay? And if it starts to come close again, put up a little sign that says, no. Stop it. How does that feel? And she went, well, that's much better. Now, for him, when I said, do you feel like doing it? He went, yeah. He was believable. Now, what happens if he goes out there and he has trouble doing this? Gee, he'll have to do the same thing we did. It will take him, what, 5 minutes? Constantly I hear, but what if the phobia comes back after 6 months? Well, good, then take another 5 minutes and do it again. Hey, every once in a while, you have to tune your car up, too. Don't be so fucking sticky about everything. Does this mean that I'll be broken for the rest of my life? Only if you continue to whine about it. Now, I tell you what I want you to do is I don't want this to be gone with the wind. I just want you to look at a good decision, a bad decision, and then a decision that they're making. Have them think about it and see if it goes into one. I only want you to know where the pictures are, how are they different. With feelings, you want to know where do they start, how do they build up, and when they go, where do they go away. When they think about a good one versus a bad one, is it different? Now, what this is going to do is it ultimately, tomorrow, we're going to design a thing so that if you don't like the way you feel, you can get rid of it, right? And if you like it, but you'd really like it to feel a lot better, right, that you can make it so that you turn it up. But not only so you can turn it up, so you can put more good stuff in it. A few chemicals here and there, you can even make your feelings so that they're better than you ever imagined. My question for all of you for the next 3 days. Neurolinguistic programming asks the question, how competent can you become like other people? Which means your goal is to try to be kind of as good as other people are. DHE, the question is, how much pleasure can you stand? And can they catch your dust? Because you're not going to try to be emulating someone. You're going to be trying to build things that exceed the scope of the study. And you're going to use your unconscious resources and things that don't exist. We're going to put switches in that control room in your mind that when we put them in there, you're going to be making that sound where you go, ooh. And we're going to wire them up so that they're measurably right. Because you don't want to just push the button and have nothing happen. That wouldn't be any fun, now would it? You know, that's like somebody said to me, they said, you know, with virtual reality, just think about it. Pretty soon you'll be able to hook up and you'll be able to have sex with any movie star you want. And I said, don't we already have that? And they went, no, it'll be done with machines. And I said, well, that doesn't strike me as a giant step forward. I got news for you. I can type with one hand, but I'm not going to do it while I'm having sex, okay? Masters and Johnson literally recommend that while you're having sex, you float out of your body and across the room and think about baseball games. Well, excuse me. I read the book and I went, what? I tell you, astro traveling while you're having sex does not strike as me as a good idea. See, when I'm having sex, I not only want to be in my body, I want to be in somebody else's too. And they go, but what about premature ejaculation? And I go, time distortion. Hey, if you can wait in line at the bank and have a minute take for an hour, well, I see no reason. It's not the world that's turning any faster. You just have to get your brain to do things the way you want to. Remember, if you can't make it so that you're thinking what you want to think, then making it so that your body performs the way you want it to is probably totally out of the question. That's why people get in situations where they should be totally relaxed and their heart starts racing and they start sweating and they start going crazy. Biggest phobia on the face of the earth, public speaking. I mean, you take somebody from where you're sitting and you put them up here and suddenly they're terrified. And you know what? The ways in which they do it are hysterical. Because I ask people in my public speaking course, the trainer's training and stuff, I always go, well, how do you scare themselves? And I hear things like this and they go, well, the first thing I do is I see an audience of people and they have little bodies and great big heads and giant eyes and they never blink. And their heads are like going like this, swelling up and down. And I hear myself stumbling over words. And every time I do, they start looking meaner and meaner. And I said, oh, so you're going to teach at the Village of the Damned, huh? Well, I tried it. It scares the crap out of me, too. It scares me that people think that way. You know, if you don't make it so that your own mind is user-friendly, and it's not looking for root causes, digging in your childhood. It's just making sure that you know where to put pictures, because if you put the right picture in the wrong place, it still won't help you. If you put it in something that you hope you could have, it won't be there when you need it. But you know the alarm clock wakes you up. That's a good place to put it. If you know that something is funny, put your problems there. They always tell you you're going to look back and laugh. My policy is, why wait? If you're having problems and laughing your ass off, you may not be socially acceptable, but you won't feel as bad as most people do when they tell you, well, I'm sorry, you know, Mr. Smarty Pants. And I went, Samadhi Pants? What does that mean, Samadhi? And I looked it up, and it turned out all these years I thought I was being criticized, and basically I've been told that I'm an enlightened lover. So I wrote letters to all of these people and said, I didn't realize what you thought of me. I thought you didn't like me, and all the time you were just envious of my sexual prowess. I had some of the principals of my school wrote back and went, who are you? And I sent back that picture from school, right, you know, but I put horns on it, morphed it, you know. I said, my true identity turned my eyeballs around this way, so they were slits. And I said, you may remember me from the school. You said I was the devil's spawn, but I just don't know how you knew that. Anyway, Dad says he's coming to visit you soon. You get these interesting responses. They write you back and go, you are just kidding, aren't you? That's when they find themselves picking up the phone and dialing it, and they called you a number that they don't know why they dialed it. And when the phone rings, I pick it up and I go, Frank, is that you? And they go, who is this? And I said, oh, you were thinking about me. You know, the devil's spawn? And they go, Richard, is that you? And I go, yeah, well, you called me. You must know. And they go, I don't know why I called. And I said, that's right. You don't know. And next time you think about torturing a child in a school, don't. Bad things will happen. Then I mail them things, in the mail, because the mail is fun. You can send people things that basically aren't bad, but if they're doing bad things, it will scare them. You know, principal caught in sexual risque with students, and it's not even them, but when they get a copy of an article about it, hey, they change their behavior. You know, it turns out that, you know, maybe some of them could stop doing some of the things they're doing. I even wrote an article about how I was tortured by teachers and stuff through stupidity. And I always keep copies of it around and mail it out all the time when people tell me, well, my kid's going to this school and blah, 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 blah. And I send them a copy of it because in the article it talks about how I drop by schools all the time, which I started doing. And actually the state of California paid me. They said, well, we'd like you to make some random checks. Good. And I did. Because I figured, you know, if you do something wrong, they put a check on your paper. So I went in with a big red felt pen and went like that. But that wasn't the part that frightened them. It's when I turned around and walked out and I had that bowling shirt that said 666 on it. Bowling for meaning. It says change your behavior or change your job. If you can't be nice to kids, you shouldn't be teaching them. Because if they're not having fun, they won't learn anything other than to not trust people and to look for what's wrong. Because if you're looking for problems, you will find them. But if you're looking for solutions and how to feel good, it's a piece of cake. All you have to do is open up the gates and a little cleanup work, which we'll get to. We have to get rid of that serious part of you guys. You guys are far too serious. Right? If I change my tonality, oh, yeah, this is serious. Right? You know what? The fact that things are fun is what makes them work. Einstein there, right? You know what? He couldn't do arithmetic, couldn't do math. So he changed it. Cool, huh? You can do the same thing. On this planet, remember, it's all smoke and mirrors at the bottom line. So anyway, what I want you to do is grab a partner, right, and I want you to spend like 15 minutes apiece. Just find out the difference. It's just a little thing. See if you can find somebody who knows a little thing, and then meet me back here. I have just one more thing I want to do today. So you 15 minutes, and so pairs of two, and then meet me back here at 6:15. And I'll have you out of here by 6:30, okay? In case you're worried about that planning ahead stuff. All right, get to it. Richard calling Earth. Richard calling Earth. Tasting. 1, 2, 3. Is this on? You wean yourself off of any other drug that, you know, the trick is, especially with things you're highly addicted to, is go cold turkey, but first reduce it down so that, you know, because, I mean, the system shock you'll go through. I've had people that were, you know, taking so much of a drug that if they stopped taking it, it would kill them. So you weed it down, and with sleep, what you do is you keep getting up at the same time, but going to bed later. And then when you go to bed, when you say you're going to wake up, when you set that alarm clock for tomorrow, you guys, right, as long as you're going to say that you're going to wake up at a certain time, add a few things on there, like you're going to wake up wide awake, alert, refreshed, feeling vibrant, curious, and explode into your day with joy and curiosity, wondering how much you can learn, how much fun you can have, how much you can get done, where are all the opportunities that you used to miss. So that when you wake up, you know, when I wake up, it's like, I used to wake up and go, oh, fuck. And then the sheets would feel really good, right? And the pillow would hold on to my head. And the blanket would say, you don't want to get up, Rich. Trust me, it's cold outside. You know, and I'd go, well, I'll just sleep for another 10 minutes, you know. And then I'd close my eyes and maybe wake up a day later. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't have that voice, though. I know other people that did. I had this voice that overrides all other voices that says, fuck it, who cares, you know? And I tried all the threats. This is going to go on your permanent record. Yeah, right. You know, they tell you that in elementary school. I can't believe it. I warned my kids about it, too. I told my kids, I said, now you're going to school. Let me tell you that when you go to school, there's adults there, and they lie, like, constantly. And I said, they're going to threaten you, and these are going to be the big things. One is, it's going to go on your college transcript, and you won't be able to go in college. And I said, nothing you do in elementary school is going to stop you from going to college. You know, I said, I don't care if you ever get any good grades. They don't start counting until high school, right? And then it really doesn't matter anyway because, you know, there are ways around all that stuff. I never even took my SATs or any of that stuff, right? You know, I mean, they said... On there it said, send your transcripts with your SATs, right? So I sent in an envelope, and I made a label on the front, SATs, you know, and it was empty, right?